Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
Is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
The New World Report. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Professor Evan Ellis, the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. We begin with Central America, very close to the border, always involved in the immigration stories. But there are elections to determine and elections in the future in Central America that will be fundamental to the understanding of immigration, trade, reshoring, and security. Professor, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much. We start in Guatemala City. Two candidates have emerged from the first round of the election for the presidency. Sandra Torres, the wife of a former leader of the country, and a man named Bernardo Arevalo. And as I understand your reporting, it was a surprise that Arevalo scored so well. I believe that Senator Torres, who's a very well-known figure, having been First Lady, is around 15%, and Arevalo did around 11%. They go now to a second round. But here's the confusing part. The results of the first round have not been certified or validated or confirmed, and there's a holdup. Why? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Well, the real background story is part of a broader process in which the conservative Guatemalan families who have always used their control over institutions to steer politics and the economy are trying to avoid a candidate coming in that would reshape the order. And so in the run-up to the election itself, although you had many different candidates, you saw the Supreme Court, which are dominated by those influences, coming up with various reasons to eliminate candidates that were seen as threats. These included Roberto Arzu, Thelma Cabrera, and most recently Carlos Pineda. So it was expected when they went into the election on June 25th that the person that ended up coming out on top, establishment candidate Sandra Torres, would come out on top. But it was believed that the former daughter of dictator Efrain Rios Montt, Zuri Rios, would probably get number two. But so the surprise was that a candidate that was way down in the pack, Bernardo Arevalo, with a small party, Semilla, basically became the rallying point for voter frustration over corruption and kind of the rigged system in Guatemala. Actually, Arevalo's party, Semilla, the fame of the party wasn't so much him as previous Attorney General Thelma Aldana, who had played a big role in the Counter-Corruption Commission, CSIG, that had fought against elites before. And so basically, Arevalo being catapulted into the race was kind of a frustration of not having other options. However, again, the story wasn't over yet at this point because the Supreme Court has now taken what were largely seen as unfounded challenges to say that maybe the vote was rigged, maybe there was corruption. And so initially they did a recount on June 30th that showed no issues. Then they said, okay, we're going to actually delay certifying the results to review the ballot even more. That was something that the OAS protested against. That was something the EU protested against. But that initial recount, which has been basically done, came up with no serious irregularities and no indication of substantial change in the numbers. However, the Supreme Court just came out again and they said, okay, we're going to continue to delay this and consider recounts for 10 more days. And so instead of this, results of the first round being announced this Friday, it's going to go farther. And it is seen by many that this may be an attempt to either try to undermine the chances of Arevalo of being actually elected, which is now a realistic possibility once he's certified, or maybe even to push the election into next year, in which case technically Guatemala's Congress would have the opportunity, again, dominated by those interested elites, to select the president basically basically overriding the election. So whatever is actually happening behind the scenes, and again, the OAS and the EU have been very, very vocal about this. Anthony Blinken, our Secretary of State, has been vocal talking about U.S. deep concerns. But it smells like something is amiss, that the continuing efforts to prevent a candidate that could threaten the establishment from being selected as the next president.
Is Torres not acceptable, or are they concerned that she could be defeated? Which is it?
The concern is that the rallying around a basically anti-corruption, anti-establishment candidate like Arevalo by those who are frustrated basically could bring into power somebody who is not in control of the elites. Torres is seen as aligned with those elites. She's the wife of previous President Alvaro Colom of the National Hope Party, the UNE.
And therefore, what we're looking at here is it's not enough to have all the power and authority and access to government. They want a sure thing twice over. I understand. The concern also is that the whole region is watching this for a new day or not. As I recall, many of the votes were scored without a choice in protest. I want to move to Honduras, also part of the Northern Triangle, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. Much in the news the beginning of 21 because of those parades of refugees, immigrants, migrants coming north to the border. Not much talked about now because the migration story is so international. But Honduras elected a president, Castro, in 2022, and promises were made by Ms. Castro about anti-corruption. Same story in Guatemala. Now there's news. A UN mission of experts arrived in Honduras to examine the establishment of an international anti-corruption mission in the Central American nation, which is plagued by widespread corruption that exacerbates poverty and immigration, Honduran authorities announced Sunday. As I understand it, this was a campaign promise, and the delay has caused a great deal of unhappiness in Honduras. At the same time, I mentioned President Castro made a much ballyhooed trip to Beijing, making common cause with Xi Jinping and the Chinese investment in all of the Americas, announcing plans for a $20 billion investment in a railroad construction in Honduras. Do these things fit together? Corruption, China, $20 billion, promises broken. I'm lost, as I'm supposed to be, and we're not writing a Graham Greene novel with a moral ending.
Well, you're right, John. Although the issues are separate, there are certain interrelationships, especially when we think about U.S. equities and strategic equities in the area that is so geographically close, but to which we're also tied by bonds of family and commerce. And so in the case of Honduras, it's much like Guatemala and other parts of Central America, where the legacy of the colonial period, essentially a rigged system of the dominant elites that got worse with the corruption of narco trafficking, et cetera, in the 1970s and going forward. And so each of the regions had responded trying to bring in outsiders. In the case of Guatemala, of course, it had been a United Nations-led commission called CICIG, which ironically got a little bit out of control of the elites and was ultimately booted out of the country after they went after too many high-level people. In Honduras, there was a similar case in which a Organization of American States-led counter-corruption body called the MASI was brought in. But again, despite being more limited, that was seen as too threatening to the president of Honduras, Juan Orlando Hernandez, who himself eventually convicted of corruption, basically allowed their permission in the country to expire. But so one of the big promises of the current government, the Libre government of Xiomara Castro in Honduras when they were campaigning, was that going after Juan Orlando, going after the corrupt elites, they were going to bring an even more powerful anti-corruption commission in, like Guatemala, headed by the United Nations. So the chickens are coming home to roost. And so fulfilling that promise, you now have the initial negotiations over, what would that look like? And so the United Nations team has come in to talk about setting up this CICI, which again would look something like the CICIG in Guatemala. But the issue is that, again and again, parties that bring in anti-corruption commissions thinking that they can control them, then get a little bit uncomfortable when they find that those powers are go out of their control. And so the issue of how much independence will the CC have to investigate crimes, whether there will be a repeal of some laws that basically prevent the current Honduran public ministry from investigating and prosecuting officials. So all of those things have to be worked out. And so now the other issue, though, really goes to given the problems of this region, the important ways in which, of course, with political change and other things, the Chinese have advanced. As we've talked about in recent weeks, you had the flip of Honduras from Taiwan to the PRC. The current leftist government of Xiomara Castro has moved very rapidly in terms of a number of major deals. So, one of those has certainly been negotiating of a new free trade agreement. There's also a political coordination mechanism. There is a talk about basically bringing in the Chinese to redo the data infrastructure with Hondutel, the electricity infrastructure, build a second dam called Petucha 2 in the country, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the new projects that also is raising some particular concerns is that Honduras is a logical place for the construction of basically a rail corridor connecting the Atlantic to the Pacific. This would be a huge project because you'd have to basically upgrade the ports on both the Atlantic and Pacific side, and then lay the high speed, or I'm sorry, the cargo rail line there. They're talking about a $20 billion project. However, certain other things happen to be along that corridor. It's not too far from Pomerola, the air base where U.S. Joint Task Force Bravo, for example, operates. And so the prospect of this $20 billion Chinese investment, on top of the other Chinese advances in the country, suggests the play by the PRC to bring in its economic influence, but at the end of the day, really kind of control strategic terrain, not too far away from the United States.
The third member of the Northern Triangle, El Salvador, of note, because a decision was made some time ago to ignore the constitution of the country in some fashion. Salvadoran political party President Nayib Bukele has announced his candidacy for the presidential elections of early 2024, even though the country's constitution does not allow consecutive terms for the presidency. He began his term in 2019. What I know about Bukele is that he's young. He makes rash decisions about investments in cryptocurrency and has a fantastic idea of using a volcano for a source of energy in order to mine or create bitcoins. At the same time, he's detained thousands, tens of thousands, on suspicion of being part of drug cartels, and he's also intimidated the legislature. Is this seen as, in some fashion, disturbing to the region that Bukele ignores the Constitution?
Well, it's probably disturbing with a little D, John, but the broader problem that connects with Guatemala and Honduras is really kind of the loss of faith that traditional democracy will help solve these endemic problems of corruption and violence and development. And so in the case of Bukele, essentially you had a leader coming in who calls himself the coolest dictator basically, once he was able to not only win the election because of frustration with the other established parties, Arena and the FMLN and Ghana, but he was able then to he decided, okay, well, Salvador is suffering from gang violence. It's difficult to go after the gangs with the existing legislative situation and human rights consideration. So basically, last, I believe, was April 2022, he declared a state of emergency. He used the military in ways that had never fully been done before to just start arresting anybody that was suspected of being a gang member. And so something like 66,000 gang members under the state of emergency have been just thrown in jail. As a matter of fact, he's actually made slick videos about how the gang members are being mistreated in jail. But the rub of all of this is that El Salvador, which used to suffer oppressive levels of violence and gang extortion from Mara Salvatrucha and Barrio 18, has become dramatically more safe. And so Bukele, who really has thrown democracy and human rights under the bus, has become hugely popular because Salvadorans feel secure on the streets in ways they haven't for decades. They don't have to pay extortion anymore in general. And so, his own party just elected him without contest as the candidate. So even though the Constitution says that he can't be reelected again, it looks like, who cares? They found a clause in the Supreme Court to say, okay, well, technically, if you step down, then you can be reelected because that's not a consecutive reelection. And so it looks like, again, yet another way, his reelection, or at least coming reelection, in which they're trampling on democracy. But it really goes to the deeper issue that Latin Americans are leaders that can find something that works even when they trample on democratic processes with long-run consequences. Those leaders are very popular, and that's a lesson that's not lost on the region.
Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College. I'm John Battle.